Okay, item number nine. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Young. There's a staff report for this item, and hopefully the board members have had a chance to look at that. And it is about the subject we were just talking about, what our priorities are and our resources and where we're going in the future. So much of it has already been discussed this morning. So I'm going to just walk through this, and I'll probably use some slides to illustrate a couple of points. But in the summary on the first page, we talk about that between 2000 and 2010, we've lost 25% of our staff. We went from 80 to 60 people. And during that same time period, our workload has increased dramatically. We've gone from many hundreds of cases over the years, you know, since our organization started, to today where we have many thousands of cases. And there's an illustration in the staff report on page 2, which is figure 1, where we're trying to show that, where back in the 60s, we basically just dealt with wastewater, and over the years, we've added programs and types of discharges to today, where we have a very long list of programs, 20 programs, and so many dischargers that we regulate that it's virtually impossible to have any kind of a relationship with all of those dischargers. And our culture used to be that we did have that relationship. And there's still that residual is still there today, that residual culture where some people want us to have that kind of relationship. Like early on, we very rarely ever took enforcement action because we had these one-on-one relationships and we were able to work out almost all issues with dischargers. And it just doesn't exist anymore. We can't do it. But yet there is pressure to continue to act that way. And it was even here today, you know, as board members expressed that we should be doing more education and outreach and working with people and helping people. And we do that on a day-to-day basis. It takes up a lot of our time. But we can't do it with thousands and thousands of dischargers. You know, it's just physically impossible to do it. So although it takes up a lot of our time, we're only reaching a few people. So that is a reality that we live in now, is that our staff level has gone down dramatically, as it has for other regional boards. It's not just our board. And the workload and the number of dischargers has gone up dramatically and continues to go up. And that trend is going to continue, meaning the workload and the number of dischargers. Right now, we're talking with the state board, for example, about regulating grazing and how we're going to do that into the future. Our biggest issue that we've ever dealt with is irrigated agriculture. There are 450,000 acres, approximately, of irrigated agriculture in our region. There are 3.2 million acres of grazing. So if we take on the grazing issue and we start to regulate that land use, we would be adding thousands of additional discharges. And in terms of the number of discharges, we could easily double the workload that the office has right now. So if we do that, we have to figure out a system that allows us to regulate those entities in an efficient and an effective way. We can't do it on a one-on-one basis working with discharges. We have to create a system where those discharges are reporting information to the board, and then we manage that database. And it needs to be a comprehensive relational database that we manage to determine what the water quality impacts are, where we need to focus our attention, and which discharges we need to follow up with. And Angela Schroeder, the main reason that she got the award from the Professional Engineers in California government is she led the effort to create a new type of database system for these types of dischargers, and that's what our ag order is based on. And that's our future if we're actually going to do this. If we're going to continue down this path where we regulate more and more dischargers, we have to create those kinds of systems. It's just not doable otherwise. So we have to engage the state board in this at all levels, board member, at the board member level, at my level, at Ken's level, and we have to talk to them about how we're going to move forward with this. Because otherwise it's not doable. Otherwise we would be just, it would be a facade. We wouldn't actually be dealing with the issue. And there are other issues besides grazing. There are confined animal facilities. There are many of these in our region. We don't know how many, but there are hundreds to, I'm looking at Chris Rose, hundreds to perhaps 1,000 of these types of facilities in our region.
I thought they had to be permitted.
I'm sorry, what did you say, Chris?
Were you looking for a confirmation that we could potentially be talking about the numbers in the thousands for grazing operations, for example?
Yeah.
Yes.
We don't directly regulate them.
The confined animal facilities?
Correct.
I thought...
Not necessarily confined animal operations. Some of them could be confined animal operations, although I think we have a handle on some of those. But others are just simply grazing operations that we've identified in TMDLs, like some of our older bacteria TMDLs you probably remember, where we have prohibitions and we see that we're going to be working with these folks. So there isn't a program here in Region 3 to specifically regulate those facilities. Mm.
And we find them, you know, we find these facilities as we're out and about and realize that they are not being regulated. They're below the radar. And also ranchettes, like 1 acre, 2 acre, 5 acre, 10 acre parcels where people are using them to hold animals. And the erosion problems from those sites are tremendous. And there are thousands of them in our region. There are also marijuana growers. It's becoming a very big issue in California. Region 5 is having to deal with that issue right now. And initially, Region 5 did not want to send their staff out to those sites because they were dangerous. And so they're working with the state board and enforcement, law enforcement officials, to figure out how they're going to manage those facilities because the water quality impacts from them are huge. And we have no idea how many there are, but we estimate that there are many of them and growing.
In Region 3?
In Region 3, too, yes. In the Santa Cruz Mountains area. Yep. And there's also the groundwater overdraft issue that Ken mentioned. And groundwater overdraft is becoming a crisis throughout California. In our region alone, we have Paso Robles, Cambria, Napomo, and
Watsonville.
And these issues are only going to get worse over time, and they're becoming in many areas at a crisis level. But not just in our region, around the state. And we're not yet equipped to deal with those issues. So over time, over the next several years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, all of these issues are going to become bigger and bigger, and we've got to figure out a new way of doing business. And it can't rely on just the, you know, what we've done years ago where we worked a lot on one-on-one with dischargers. We've got to create new systems to do that. But I wanted to show you that, is that on, Harvey? I want to talk a little bit about priorities. Do I need a microphone? Or can you hear me?
You could speak louder.
I have a cold and I might lose my voice, so no cheering. So when you ask a group of people what is our top priority, and I've gone to other regions and asked this question, we get all kinds of great answers. Harvey, can you work the slides for me? We get all kinds of responses. Okay, go ahead. That's pretty small font, though. So I'm just going to go through a list of things that's typical for people to say about what they think the highest priority is that we should. So a common one is the current program or the work plan that I am responsible for. I have to implement this program or this work plan, and so what's in this work plan is the highest priority, should be the highest priority for the organization. Protecting public health. That's an interesting one because in these conversations, I brought that up and got responses from people where they said, wait a minute, that's not our job, but I'll come back to that. Next one. More staff. Our highest priority should be getting more staff. We're understaffed, workload's increasing, got to get more people. Better statewide policies, enforcement, the X program, whatever program that person happens to be working on or responsible for. So that program is the most important. Another one is what the board wants, which is interesting because that can create tension between staff and the board sometimes, where staff are working on cases and they have this knowledge of the water quality issues and what needs to change, what the pollutant loads are, and what pollutant loads are causing the most degradation and how they should be reduced. And so sometimes there's a friction between that information and what the board might want to work on. Basin plan, train, and review. That's basically updating our basin plan. Some people feel that is the most important thing that we should be working on. Responding to the public. And you heard that today. That a fundamental part of our job is responding to the public. And then where do you draw the line on that, as Ken was talking about? Is it an absolute? Whatever it is, we've got to respond to the public. I got a complaint that Diablo Canyon, this is from a woman who called me, and said Diablo Canyon is pumping and storing nuclear waste underneath her house. What do I do with that? How much time do I spend on that? It's real. It was a real complaint. I had another complaint that a family lost one of their children, and Harvey and I got this complaint. A family up north, they lost one of their children, and they were commemorating that event. And so they were having a get-together, and they were releasing balloons. And a member of the public called us and said, you have to prevent this. You have to intervene and prevent the release of those balloons because it's harmful to the environment. And I said to Harvey, no, we're not going to respond to that. We won't be contacting that family because of the situation and because the release of these balloons is not a water quality priority for us. Well, we got in a little bit of trouble with State Board because we weren't responding to a formal public complaint. But nevertheless, we did not respond to it. Next one. Performance measures. So you heard a little bit today about performance measures. The State Board has performance measures for us, and some people believe those are the most important thing. And that also causes friction with regional boards because they are often not necessarily water quality-based performance measures. Are we improving water quality? Are we improving the environment? Are we protecting public health? But they are administrative-type performance measures. Are we updating permits on time, issuing new permits, doing inspections, things like that? Okay, next one. What is it? Oh, education outreach. Sorry, I thought it was a stone. Yeah, I can't even read it from here. Education outreach. That has come up in a lot of our board meetings, and especially with all the controversy around the ag order, that comes up frequently for us. Do more education outreach, better education outreach. Dr. Wolf brought that up earlier this morning in response to the State Board's order. Are we going to have workshops to explain the State Board's decision? Next one. Collaboration. This is a big one that we hear a lot. And that is work more with the public, and work more with other entities, with other stakeholders to achieve solutions. Okay, so one of the ones we brought into the picture, our region brought into the picture, in terms of priorities, was this idea of protecting public health. And at some of the other regions,
some of the folks there said to me, why would we do that? We are not a public health agency. That's the Department of, that is the Department of Public Health. It's not us. And so to illustrate why I went to Port of Cologne, Water Quality Control Act, which is the act that establishes this board and other regional boards and gives us our authority. And it says in the very first section, the legislature further finds and declares that the health, safety, and welfare of the people of the state requires that there be a statewide program for the control of the quality of all the waters in the state. The Port of Cologne is based on the health and safety and public health. And so that is one of the reasons why it's a major priority for our office. And now, interestingly, other regional boards are following suit. And in our region, as you know, we have a tremendous problem with nitrates in groundwater. We have thousands, tens of thousands of domestic wells in our region. I think the estimate is around 44,000, and we think that estimate is low, and a large percentage of them are threatened with nitrate and are known to be contaminated with nitrate. And that's a direct threat to public health. We also have the municipal beneficial use. And that is a designated beneficial use that we are required to protect, municipal and domestic use. That is a public health beneficial use. And so it is our highest priority. Okay, go ahead. So Ken already mentioned these. You can click through those. Ken already mentioned these five priorities this morning, so I won't repeat them. Go ahead. So I wanted to, in this discussion, which I hope is more of a discussion than just me talking, so we really like to get your input on this, the board members' input on this. And one of the things that, you know, when we wrote that staff report, it's not the type of staff report we normally write, where we sort of open up the hood and let you see what's inside, and it's not very pretty inside, what we're actually doing, what the workload is like, and how we're focusing on the highest priority things and the amount of work that is not getting done today. So we wanted to show that and illustrate it. So I got a couple of slides that I hope illustrate that, and also I give examples in the staff report. And so what I wanted to emphasize today is to show that context in which we work. We have way more work than we can physically do, and that workload is increasing over time. We only end up doing a percentage, a small percentage of the actual workload. And again, the organization is contracted while the workload is greatly increased. We have many other obligations beyond the actual cases that we work on.
Can you give a couple of examples?
Of other obligations? Yep, I will as we go through this. And when we add something, you know, this is what Ken was talking about, when we add big issues or anything for that matter, we're at a place where we have to stop doing something else. The plate is so far beyond full that it's not an option to just add something. Whenever we add anything, we are going to stop doing something else, and we have to consciously decide what that is. So our goal here is, as always, to focus on priorities, define them, focus on them, stay focused on them, make informed decisions, and resist drift off of those priorities. So as an example of vertical prioritization, we have been going through prioritization in our office for a few years now. And we've been highly focused on it. And most of our meetings end up being a discussion in some way or another around priorities and challenging ourselves, asking ourselves, are we continuing to focus on our highest priorities? So if you imagine, we have several units in our office. I think we have, how many do we have? How many units do we have in our office?
Six.
We have six units in our office. We used to have nine. We contracted them down to six. And if you imagine, every one of those units now has vertically prioritized all the work in their unit. Click through till they come across the page. So we've got multiple units. They've all prioritized their cases. These are the top priorities here. These are the medium priorities, and these are the low priorities. Go ahead. One more. So because we have way more work than we do, there is a line that we have to draw. There's a line below which we are not doing this work, even though these are actual cases in front of us. There may be a permit, there may be a cleanup case, it could be a 401 certification, it could be a municipality or a part of a municipality. We're not working on it. And over time, that line has been going up as we have lost staff, lost 25% of our staff over the last 10 years. Go ahead. And today, where the line is about like here, we estimate. I can't give you an exact number. I can't say you we're not working on 74.3% of our work. I can't give you that number because it fluctuates. But the line is pretty high in terms of what we are able to work on and what we are not able to work on. Most of what we do now is just high priority stuff. High priority in terms of water quality, threat to water quality. Much of the medium priority and lower priority work we're not working on.
And Michael, is any of the work below the line?
Pardon?
Is any of the work below the line in the medium and lowest priority tiers work that EPA mandates that we do?
Yes, there are.
Or that the water code mandates that we do?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think Phil mentioned 401 certs earlier. There's a lot of 401 certs we can't get to. We are required to act on them within a certain time period, or they are deemed approved. That's one example.
And this is true for all regions. We're not alone in this.
And the State Board is aware of this?
Oh, yes, definitely. They struggle. The State Board is struggling with the same thing. Yep. Okay, next slide. Okay, so take one program, and this is the site cleanup program. Taya is the supervisor of this program. She has prioritized all of the cases in her unit, and there are high priority, medium priority, and low priority cases. She could tell you, if you pick any case, she could tell you what priority that is, whether it's high, medium, or low, and why, in terms of water quality and threat to human health. These cases up here would be the greatest threat to human health, these top cases. The Olin site cleanup that many of the board members will remember, that's up here. It's a high-priority case. And others like it, where drinking water is threatened. Human health is threatened. They are vertically prioritized in the sense that even in high priority, they're vertically prioritized. So this one is more important than this one. This one's more important than this one. So they're prioritized 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, on down the list. So again. And literally, the situation we're in is that we're not able to do many of these cases below a certain line. Again. And that line has been moving up over time. So we're at a point in that unit where almost all of our time is spent on high-priority cases. And we wanted to have the section managers and supervisors here today so that it could be more of a discussion, so you could talk to Taya and others, as you were doing earlier, Jeff, about what that's like. And this creates stress in our organization, as you could imagine, because Taya is the type of person who is extraordinarily dedicated to her job. And to try and get Taya and her team to not work on these cases is really difficult because they want to work on them. And they want us to, Ken and I and the State Board, to do something about this situation, you know, to acquire more staff and be able to deal with these cases. Because these people, both the stakeholders and the responsible parties, are real, and they're contacting us, and they're asking, why are you not working on my case?
So what kind of discussion would you like on this? Do you want us to brainstorm over how we...
See, I don't think they...
Either we're going to do things more efficiently, if that's even possible, or we strategize over getting more resources so that we can accomplish more.
Yeah. So one of the things that we talked about in bringing this to the board, I don't look at it as bringing this to the board. We're bringing you a problem we want you to solve.
Right.
You can't solve it. This can only be solved in Sacramento with the legislature and the governor's office and the State Water Board. They are all aware of this situation. the state board, the legislature to some degree, and the governor's office to some degree are aware of this situation. So what we try to do is illustrate it in the various venues that we go to, myself in the assistant executive officer meetings, Ken in the MCC meetings, and in WQCC, sometimes it comes up. And in our day-to-day interactions, the program work tables, round tables that we go to, we talk about this and the situation that we're in priority setting. So the organization is aware of it. It's just that it's the situation that we've been in, the recession that we have gone through for the past several years, that fixing this has not been realistic. It's been going the other direction, and we all realize it, and we try to prioritize and stay focused on the greatest threats to human health, the greatest priorities. And so as far as the discussion, I guess what I was wanting to get out of it was by illustrating it this way and saying it bluntly like this, is that the board would become aware of it and consider it, you know, that it would be in the forefront of your thinking when you're interacting with us and having board meetings and directing staff to do things. You know, to be aware of what is actually going on with our organization. So it's an awareness. And as discussion to help, a discussion to, and you can ask us anything, you know, to help you understand what's actually going on.
So I have a question then, Jeff. I assume in the ranking, pardon me, of medium and low, some of it relates to low threat or medium threat to the environment as one of your prioritization ranking. But are any of these low and medium threats sometime causing undue financial hardship to the public? Because, you know, we're the regulators, so we tell the public, excuse me, this was not the French accent, okay.
You need a little bit of wine.
Yes, Jeff. So, you know, we tell the public, you have to comply with XYZ regulation. But I could think of some cases where it triggers a permit requirement that you cannot do, you know, a construction activity without getting a permit from the water board. And delays can be very costly. So are you including that in your evaluation of the ranking?
Yes.
And if so, I mean, is this a very serious issue too? Because I think, you know, and I'm sure you do that, you know, you have to look at it internally but also externally. You know, we're addressing here our internal problems, but, you know, we have to be recognizant, you know, we have our external customers. Mm-hmm. And can you comment on that?
The short answer, and I'll let Taya jump in here because she knows this, her unit way better than I do, is that yes, we're aware of that, and yes, there are financial hardships. And in many of these cases, there are financial hardships with cleanups. I would say any cleanup is a financial hardship on somebody because these things are very expensive. And it can hold up property, it can hold up property transfers, it can hold up development, hold up all kinds of things. So I agree that we're trying to manage the internal situation, but we're prioritizing on the external situation. We're prioritizing on threat to human health. So if we have to choose between a financial burden or delaying, let's say delay the development of a project, versus someone is drinking a carcinogen, we'll focus on the or there's a direct threat that they will be drinking a carcinogen, we'll focus on the latter. We have to choose between the two. And that's literally where we're at, making those kinds of choices. Okay.
So, for example, a lot of the high-priority cases are former dry cleaners. The former dry cleaner operators are deceased. Now we're stuck with a property owner that's required to clean it up. But if the threat is large enough, for example, someone's breathing in air that's unhealthy, regardless of what the financial situation as we pursue that, try to find other funding if we can, work with other agencies if we can. So they are ranked based on threat to human health. For those that are more in the lower priority, they are definitely still a threat. You can't close them because there still needs to be some work done on them. But they're at low enough levels to not have a situation where it would go into a drinking water well or it would be harmful for inhaling the vapors coming off the groundwater. So what I've done is all those low priority ones I've assigned to myself. So if I get a call on that and say it's in a situation where someone wants to buy that property, a developer, and they say, okay, I have this window of opportunity to do something about this, it gets bumped up to a high priority. And so we can take advantage of that situation. So we're constantly flipping them. But if a low priority becomes a high priority, it really does mean that a high priority doesn't temporarily get worked on.
And that is actually, I think, a very good point and a very good example. Because one of the concerns I had is once you pigeonholed in the low priority and your case number 5, you're stuck there. But what you're saying is that you actually you have a flexibility to move it back up because of a certain situation changing.
Right, and then we also try to look at opportunities where maybe there's some that are grouped together, if we can encourage them to work together to try to find a solution. But those are things I would love to do more of, but because we're so strapped for time to work on the actual cases, we don't have time to do those bigger picture groundwater basin type of solutions that I would like to work on more.
While I have a mic, what about part-time students? I remember one time we had to significantly reduce the part-time student population. I think, in fact, all of them, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. Where do we stand now? I mean, can we bring...
So we are ramping up, and Taya actually is our student coordinator, so I'll let Taya answer that.
So currently we have 6 students, and we're looking to hire 3 more. A lot of what students do is a lot of the data entry, for example, uploading stuff to GeoTracker or helping with the lower priority cases. And so we do utilize students a lot, but we only have so much. We can only hire 9 total right now. I'm hoping that we can, but yeah, more students would be great. However, someone does have to manage the students and give them work, and that takes time too. So,
Dr. Wolf, if I could just for a minute, I wanted to sort of challenge the notion of pigeonholing too. Prioritization, as Taya does it, and I think as the other program managers do it, is a really dynamic process. Taya reprioritizes those sites every year. And then there's also this sort of opportunistic prioritization that you just hit on with her. You know, a developer comes in, suddenly there's an influx of money. There's an opportunity here to go clean up that site that didn't exist 6 months ago. And so there's an opportunistic reprioritization. Instead of viewing this as a totem pole, you could almost view it as a conveyor belt. As sites get their risk reduced, they fall down in priority, and the new sites move up in prioritization. It's dynamic. It's happening every year.
The one extra comment I want to make is as we're shortening and reducing staff, a lot of my staff help out with the ag program, so they don't work on site cleanup, because overall the nitrate issue is our highest priority in our office. And so some of those medium priorities don't get worked on temporarily while they get pulled off to do some of the hydrogeology, for example. But I just wanted to comment that line that Michael showed, it can't go higher. I cannot move that higher. It gets to the point where I'm really concerned about human health, and I'm losing one of my people that is working on a lot of the medium and low priority, and I'm concerned about who is going to do that work. And what I just wanted to stress that I don't think the lines can go up any further. So when we do look at not doing something and working on a bigger picture item, I think we really, really have to be careful, because the line has moved up, and I'm not sure if it can move up anymore.
Mr. Chair. So I think I've asked this before, but I obviously don't remember the answer. So then, since bodies in the building is an issue, where does the dynamic of cost recovery fit in this kind of stuff?
Well, actually, you can't just say, I want to add five people for cost recovery. That has to be authorized by the legislature. So it's not a matter of just saying, well, we have a, in fact, it was a situation, I think it was with Taya, one of our early discussions, was on cost recovery, there's excess money, but we don't have the bodies to use it.
So and you can't recover in excess of what you expend on the program right now, but you don't have...
Well, so for example, federal agencies have
dollars for bodies?
The federal agencies, for example, have more money they want to give us, but we can't take it because we don't have the bodies, and we can't just hire. We have to be authorized. The legislature has to authorize in the budget the state water board. So it's a matter of money and bodies. We have, in her case, she's got money, but we don't have bodies.
So like somebody's taking part of the revenue away from the function at the state level?
Well, I guess you could say that. That's
how I'd say it.
Yeah, in the fact that the state won't authorize additional positions for us to fill.
It's one of the problems.
Right.
So a more complicated example is permitting. So go ahead and hit next one. If we look at high priority permits and medium priority permits and low priority permits. So these are all high priority permits, but each vertical line is one permit. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 permits in this illustration. Each vertical line is one permit, but it has many tasks associated with it. So like an MPDS permit, there are several things that we have to do that are mandated by law that we have to do with that permit, several tasks associated with it. So we have high priority permits, medium priority permits, and low priority permits, all of which have been prioritized in our office. And there's a line, again, below which we are not doing these tasks. And we're at a point where we're not doing some high priority tasks associated with permits. And that line is moving up. Hit again. And I can't tell you exactly where it is, again, what percentages, but we're doing very little work, little or no work, on low priority NPDES permits. You just can't do it. We have, I believe, two people to do all of our MPDS permits. And it's not physically possible to do all of these tasks.
Yeah, but don't they have to be renewed every 5 years?
Yes, they do.
So what is happening with that?
We have permits that do not get renewed every 5 years.
Just administratively rolled over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There are backlog permits, and they're just on administrative continuance for the most part.
Has EPA commented?
Yes.
Recently, I mean, I know over the years I've heard of their complaints. Has this just been ongoing?
Yes.
Yeah,
they've been commenting for a number of years.
Yep. They comment on it every year.
And what's their comment?
That you need to renew those permits. Get them renewed.
They have you on administrative continuance.
Yeah. So, and, you know, what are the consequences? Well, there's different kinds of consequences. If the EPA thought that we were not implementing this program adequately, they could take the program away from us.
But they won't do that because they don't have the staff to implement it either.
They can't do it either. So they understand the situation that we're in. And we look at this in terms of, again, water quality impacts, water quality priorities. So by administratively extending a permit, you know, are we causing a significant water quality problem or not? If not, then we administratively extend it. So it's a water quality basin. Okay, next one.
Because a lot of these facilities are, you know, they're mature facilities, they're run properly, they do their monitoring. It, you know, the permit in some cases, especially if standards haven't changed, if we're not imposing a new standard and the same standards or effluent limits apply, the renewal is really a paper, for the most part, a paper exercise.
Well, when they submit their annual monitoring reports, is staff looking at those for the lowest priority NPDES permits?
No. So well, I'll let Sheila answer that question. Sheila, answer
it. Actually, we have a student that goes through and looks at the annual reports. I would say for the individual permitted facilities, the student look is the first go-around, but also the staff person has been interacting with the, they're required to submit electronically these different larger facilities. And so our staff people have been working with the facility to make sure they understand how to upload their electronic data to the database. So it helps us easily flag the violations because we know they're putting in good data. So we've been focusing a little bit more on that because we have found out that some of the municipalities haven't updated their tool, if you will, to better receive the data. So so mainly it's a student first go around looking at this, entering violations. Usually they're self-reported violations, and then they and make sure those are entered in CWICS. At every board meeting, as you know, there's a violation. The enforcement report comes out. Part of that is a violation. There's a violation list that's associated with that. Staff has gone through on the second go-around and actually reviewed each one of those violations to make sure it wasn't something, an input error that our student or that the discharger had erroneously entered. So that's kind of a second level QAQC. So now, somebody does look at these.
Even the lowest priority?
The lowest priority ones are our annual reports, and yes, they are reviewed.
Someone does look at them, and I hate to ask this question, but is staff actually comparing the conclusions in the annual reports with some of the data? Is there any kind of an auditing going on to make sure that the actual data supports the conclusions?
Are you asking if we look at the effluent limits in the permit compared to the monitoring data?
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yeah, we look at the effluent limit in the permit, and then we look at the monitoring data. And because it's an NPDES permit, they're subject to mandatory minimum penalties. For example, there will be, there's a, what we wouldn't call maybe a medium priority, but it's a highly treated groundwater case. They've had numerous violations over the years. They are still subject to mandatory minimum penalties.
And I want to comment also, CWICS has what's they've been working on for a number of years, ESMR, which is electronic self-monitoring reporting, where dischargers actually upload the data and actually identify if they've busted a limit, for example. So are any of our, I don't know if that's just the majors or majors and minors or how far that rollout for that technology is extended. Sheila, can you answer that?
All of our major and minor individual permittees are using the ESMRs, except for the ones that are not using the ESMRs are the aquaculture general permit, the highly treated groundwater general permit, and then the low threat general permit enrollees. There's seven, so that's 14 and 60. So you're saying 74 permittees are not using ESMRs at this time. But there is a focus in the next 5 years. I think State Board's going to add that capability that they will require that for those other permittees that are considered more lower threat, if you will.
While we have a pause, I just want to make one administrative comment. Our council mentioned to me that the meeting's supposed to adjourn at 1, and I'm not clear if that's a hard time or if we can extend it.
That's what you've noticed the meeting for, to end it at 1.
So okay, we have to end at 1?
So we've got about 12 or 13 minutes. And do we have any member of the public that wishes to comment on this item? Okay. And we've also got another agenda item, the office relocation.
5 minutes.
Okay.
Can't get that long.
You got a few more minutes, Michael, if you want to
okay.
Wrap it
so
up.
Go ahead, Harry, and click through to the. So, okay, stop it. So there's a. If the pie chart represents everything we do, and this shaded area is just represents a fraction of what we do, and that's just cases that we work on. There's also other things besides the actual casework, the actual permit or the case or the groundwater cleanup case, and there's a list that I made up of those other things.
Is your other obligations?
Yeah. So as we already mentioned, education and outreach, collaboration, board meetings, because board meetings aren't actually working on the case, workshops, public requests, public complaints, board requests or direction, enforcement, petitions, lawsuits, state board requests, of which there are many, UPA requests, US EPA requests, state board performance measures, meetings, meetings, and more meetings. Ken, as Ken mentioned, he's rarely in the office these days. He's usually in meetings.
Can you and explain the two colors again?
Pardon?
Can you explain?
So if the whole pie here, the whole pie chart is everything that we, all the case work that we have to do, we're only doing a fraction of that. And in addition to that, we have to do all of this stuff as well. This is mixed in with the actual case work.
So is the dark the casework and the light?
No.
The obligations?
Nope. This is all we do right here. So this is all casework. And then in addition, we have to do this stuff. So all this is casework that we're not focusing on. We're not doing.
So dark is what you're not doing that you...
Right. We're not doing this. We're doing this plus this.
So most of the dark is low priority...
Low priority and medium priority work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is, you know, those are hard lines I've drawn, but they're it obviously changes over time. Okay, so Jean-Pierre stole my thunder a little bit there this morning when he said we've got to work differently. He said smarter. And one of the things we're focusing on, one of the programs I didn't mention is the WDR program. There's almost 750 dischargers in the WDR program, and we have three people working on that. So if it was spread out evenly, 250 cases per person, and it's not possible to effectively oversee 250 cases per person. It's just not possible. We've got to figure out a different way to do it, and we need a system to do that where dischargers are reporting critical information to us into a relational database, and we then manage that database. That's how we have to change into the future, and we're going to keep talking to the state board about that. So we are actively working on solving this to the extent that we can, but the situation exists, and it's going to continue to exist for quite some time. So the idea in presenting this to you was to let you see what's actually going on, and that you'd be more informed and have this in your thoughts when we're talking about what more should we be doing, or what else should we be doing.
That was Bruce's idea to do that ag matrix.
But I got a question, if I may. And this gets back to the earlier conversation about do we work on the big things or the widgets. I think that what we should try to do also is, whenever possible, when there are issues that tend to be more of a statewide issue, is to get the State Water Board to work on it rather than ourselves. I'll give you an example. When I first started 2.5 years ago being on the board, we had the on-site water treatment plant project, better known to me as septic tanks. And a lot of staff time was done to develop that. Meantime, the state came up with their own program, which I think yourself, Ken, was involved with that. So I think we need some time to take a hard look. Are we going to take on that battle, or we leave it up to the state? And certain things, I think, are just equally as important on a statewide base than on a local base. So that's part of the big picture, I think, one area where we need to do some good soul searching when we decide what we're going to pick and choose.
So there, the State Board has a long list of policies and issues to work on, and there's a, I mean, it's really a long list, and there's a fraction of those that are currently being worked on. And we, the regions, actually now work with the State Board. They form State Board, Regional Board teams to work on these issues. And there are a number of them that we have staff currently. So that's another aspect of big picture issues that we're working on. We may not be working on an individual permit, but you know, people like Matt over there is working on he's on the governor's drinking water task force and the anti-deg group that Lori Oakham I think is heading up. So we actually are partnering with the State Board on a number of issues and working on those.
So, Dr. Wolf, just an example about that, I think, just to show you sort of the real-world decisions, like in the ag program, food safety is a major issue in our region and statewide, and we get requests all the time to participate in food safety workshops and discussions and how are we going to address this issue. And we have more than 4,000 farms that we need to regulate and implement a program. So we're trying to get State Board to take a more leadership role in dealing with food safety and engaging in those conversations. But we have one staff person to deal with the irrigated land regulatory program at the statewide level. So we're all trying to sort of shift priorities and responsibilities to make sure the important things get covered. And as Taya mentioned, that line's pretty high.
He's signaling me 5 minutes.
Okay. All right.
But I don't want to prematurely. I mean, this is something I could also cover later if you want to continue talking.
Well, this is an important item, but I think my reaction is I want to make sure, for my own edification, that Tom Howard is really aware of this.
Oh, he is.
And I'd like to make sure of that.
Okay.
And that Gordon Burns is aware of this. So. I don't know if Michael has some of these images that you could give to me before I go to the WQCC about the prioritization and the lines you've drawn and things like that. I think that'd be helpful.
Actually, one of the reasons we wanted to give this talk to you today and the presentation and look behind the scenes is, yes, one of the reasons we wanted to give this information to you today and have this conversation is we thought that Steve Moore would be here and that Gordon Burns was going to be here.
Right.
That turned out to not be the case. So if you would like to invite them back, we can repeat it.
Maybe they knew we were going to give the presentation, so they opted not to show up.
Well, I don't think we need to invite them back at this point. Those of us that are going to be up in Sacramento.
Right, or just meet with them.
We can meet with them for a few minutes and just, you know, take their pulse mm-hmm. on this.
The staff report itself, I think, illustrates the same points. Yeah. On page 4,
right.
Phil provided a table, which we highlight what we're working on and what we're not working on, and I think that's pretty stunning information for people to see.